and welcome to another session of Audio Notes. I'm Nikki Sweat, your host, and here we will talk about the 7th Main Stage Music at Menlo program of the summer, which can be heard on July 29th and July 30th. David Finkel, Wu Han, and Arno Sussman will perform two piano trios by Joseph Haydn and two by Ludwig van Beethoven. This season is titled Haydn Connections, and there are few connections between Haydn and other composers more complex and fruitful than the relationship and chain of influence that can be found and heard between him and Beethoven. David and Wu Han shared with me their perspectives on how the music of Beethoven and others springs from Joseph Haydn.
The festival is called Haydn Connections because we really believe that Haydn's music is somehow connected to almost all music that was written since his time. Certainly it is for us. We can always go back and reference some ingenious thing that Haydn did that sparked all kinds of inspiration for composers all the way through the 21st century. Putting Haydn and Beethoven next to each other, because they were in such close proximity, they lived at the same time, they lived in the same city, they both wrote string quartets and piano trios of great consequence, was a kind of a natural exercise for us, or a reveal that we wanted to share with our audiences at this summer's Haydn Connections Festival.
I can happily add that the two Beethoven trios that we have selected for this program, side by side with Haydn's ingenious, two delightful and glorious trio, are revolutionary. It's a really great program of looking back and looking forward.
David Finkel told me more about the relationship between the three instruments in the first movement of Haydn's 1794 Piano Trio in A Major, the opening piece on this concert program.
Historically, it is accepted that the strings in a piano trio in Haydn's time were there to double the piano, as we say. But who's to say for sure that in Haydn's imagination, it could not have maybe been the other way around, that the piano was there to double the strings. Certainly today with modern instruments, the possibility to hear it that way exists. When we play these trios, for example, we string players don't just ghost the piano lines. We play our lines with great attention to detail that we would give to any independent musical lines or gestures. For example, in the cello part, if I'm doubling the bass line of the piano, especially in those days when you hit a bass note in the piano, it died away right away. But with a cello there playing the same note, the cello could sustain. And a lot of times the harmonies above need the continuing bass to support it. That happens in one surprise measure in the adagio, in the first movement of the A major trio that we're talking about. Without both strings holding the pitches, that chord in the piano would have virtually disappeared before its resolution in the next bar. With the strings in there, you can hear the connection between the two chords. It's wonderful as a player and especially as a listener to notice where Haydn gives fully independent roles to the string players. The movement alternates almost constantly in subtle ways, but one spot in the first movement easily stands out, where Haydn jumps keys unexpectedly, changes the dynamic from loud to soft without warning, and creates an entirely new texture. The piano playing accompaniment triplets in the right hand, repeating fragments of the main theme in the left hand, and the strings providing sustained chordal accompaniment. And this lasts for just a few bars before you'll hear the cello take up the fragments of the theme in dialogue with the left hand of the piano. And it's really pure genius.
Haydn plays with the importance of the instruments in so many ways throughout this A major trio. In the middle of the second Andante movement, for example, the cello gets a spectacular, if brief, solo, a transition back to the melancholy opening tune where the instrument lingers alone on a tense, dominant seventh chord. And the violin achieves a real measure of equality with the piano in the final movement, a rollicking rondo on a syncopated dance tune that communicates a rustic spirit right up to the last measures. Haydn had a considerable impact on the young Ludwig van Beethoven, who moved to Vienna in order to study with the older composer. Wuhan told me about their diverging feelings about the 1795 premiere of Beethoven's Opus 1 piano trios, and Arno Sussman describes what makes each of the four movements of the Opus 1 No. 3 trio in C minor so surprising and original.
I believe Haydn was at the premiere of the Opus 1 trios, which was the concert that Beethoven used to make a debut and make a name for himself in Vienna. Haydn was there, Opus 1 No. 1, No. 2 are all incredibly successful, but Opus 1 No. 3 was temperamental. And uncompromising and angry at times. Haydn went to Beethoven and said, "This piece is not going to sell. It's too difficult in the piano part, too difficult in all three parts. No amateur would be able to manage it. Maybe you should consider withdrawing. But I have a suggestion to you. If you publish this music and said Ludwig van Beethoven, pupil of Joseph Haydn, I think you will have a good chance of selling it." Of course, knowing Beethoven, he was totally insulted. And he thought of it very carefully. In the end of the day, he published all three trios, not just the first two, all three of them as a set, without Joseph Haydn's name.
Things start off in rather normal fashion with the group playing in unison. But already by the fifth measure, we have a big surprise where the trio goes just a half a step. And that creates a very unstable feeling in the key, which is somewhat unusual. And immediately after that, there is a sort of mini cadenza-like figure. And so, in a way, the piece has stopped even before it started. Within the first 10 seconds, we have two unusual events, this raising of the half step and then this little cadenza. And then after that, it's also quite interesting because To me, the theme that starts from measure 11 and goes until 18. Is actually back to quite classical sound. You know, Mozart could have written that, Haydn could have written that. But then immediately Beethoven switches things up. It becomes somewhat more romantic, more robust. Hear that duality in Beethoven, where he's definitely attached the past to the tradition of Haydn and Mozart, but already in this Opus 1, number 3, he's expanding his capabilities. Second movement actually is not all that unusual. It's a beautiful theme in variations. I do want to point out variation 4 in the minor key, which starts with a wonderful cello solo. Is quite unusual, especially with the unstable rhythmic sense. The strings come in on the second beat of the phrase and create this uneven quality to the music. There are canonic entrances starting at measure 8, which gives us that same feeling of instability. The fourth movement is also an expansion of the form compared to Haydn and Mozart in the sense that it is a very dramatic, somewhat heavy, and very virtuosic last movement. You may typically think of more fleeting last movements of compositions in the case of Haydn and Mozart, but here with Beethoven we have extremely dramatic music.
Before the Opus 1 trios, all of the Mozart and Haydn trios are all short, 3 movements, delightful animals, mostly for after-dinner entertainment. Of course, there's some personal feeling in there. When Beethoven came on the scene, he expanded the piano trio to 4 movements, monsters.
Before Beethoven wrote his Opus 1 piano trios, Haydn and Mozart had been writing symphonies and string quartets in 4 movements for years. And so what Beethoven did by including that 4th movement in the piano trio genre is to elevate that genre to the status and weight of symphonies and string quartets. And what an innovation that was. And after Beethoven, nothing was ever the same again. And this is especially true of the piano trio.
The second half of this concert program pairs works that put the contrast between Haydn's approach to writing trios and that of Beethoven in stark relief. Haydn's E major trio, published in 1797, and among the last pieces he produced in this genre, achieves some extraordinary effects despite the small scale of the work. Still, Beethoven's Ghost Trio, written only about a decade later, sounds worlds apart. The Ghost, so named for its eerie central slow movement, reverts to a three-movement format like Haydn, and displays a similar major-minor-major pattern of movement-key relationships, but the differences between the works are pretty dramatic. Arno Sussman told me about how the two composers approach the challenge of writing central development sections in their opening movements.
Well, first you should think about what is a development. You're using material from the exposition. It could be material from the first theme, the second theme, any type of cells that the composer attaches to and then develops in the development section. Haydn, he actually uses a little cell at the beginning of the development, which came right before the development, just a cell of four notes, and uses these four notes just in the piano to sort of bring us to this incredible version of the theme that we hear at the very beginning, but in a completely different quality. The theme is much more lush. It's in the key of A flat major. I do want to point out a composition technique which I find quite interesting with Haydn, which is the use of enharmonic modulations. For example, right before this theme that we hear in A flat, he gives us the chord of D sharp major. Three chords on the piano, bum, bum, bum. And he uses this chord because D sharp major could also be equivalent to E flat major, D sharp, E flat. And so he uses this compositional technique to have these striking modulations. Now, the Ghost Trio development is much more expanded than Haydn. Beethoven goes through many different keys, and he uses many various cells from the exposition. Of course, the opening material, this comes multiple times through this development in different keys. It's actually interesting because the exposition of the Ghost also finishes with three questioning notes, somewhat similar to some things that happen in the Haydn. And then the material comes in also all kinds of dynamics. That's another thing that he develops. So at the beginning of the piece, we hear the theme fortissimo with all the strings. And then in the development, starts just with a cello in a different key of A major in a more singing, gentle quality compared to the dramatic opening. Pay attention to this pedal point on the note F in tremolo in the left hand in the piano, and this pedal point will last for quite a few measures. I'll need to switch to a pedal point of D. Above the pedal point, the strings go through this very chromatic singing line. And so again, there's this idea of development that we're going from key to key and exploring the different materials from what we hear in the exposition.
I asked Wuhan to share how Haydn and Beethoven take advantage of the capabilities of the piano in the extraordinary slow movements of both of these two trios.
The slow movement of the E major trio sounds actually like a Baroque piece. It's his tribute to Bach, I believe. The piano has this continual bass line going, and the top is a recitative of a Baroque opera. It's spectacular. It's so incredibly beautiful. If I play you this piece without telling you it's Haydn's creation, you will never believe it. The Ghost Trio's slow movement has incredible marking. Its largo, always expressivo, but underneath all of our voices, he marks sotto voce. Sotto voce means uttering. It's intentionally lower the volume of one's voice to emphasize something. The speaker will give an impression that is something might be shocking or surprise, and it's a way to get your attention. So it's immediate, a very special sound. Another special effect in that slow movement, I wish all of our audience have a chance to see the score. Beethoven went through huge trouble. If you see most of the composer writing, it will look like tremolo marking. So you have two notes and you just mark something in between. He went through the trouble, write out every single note on the first time this happened. And it's exactly he won 48 notes within that one bar. So for pianists, you know, you have this tremolo idea, but it has to be really exact. And he even write down under the chord, 24 of them, 24 of this one, 48 of this one, and this one is in 6 of every small beat. So it's when you first look at it, you're completely overwhelmed by the detail and the specific demand on the pianist. So you will hear that special sort of a frightening element of every beat has its own rhythm in there, even it's going so fast like a bee. So it's a great challenge and it's a great special effect that never happened in any other piano trios.
And David told me how both Haydn and Beethoven managed to create brilliant finales out of extremely simple melodic building blocks.
Both the finales of the trios on our second half, Haydn and Beethoven, used minimal thematic resources to make these movements. You know, for Haydn, building entire movements out of just a few ideas was really a way of life. It's basically what we call the classical style, where a work is unified through the consistency of its musical DNA. In the last movement of the Haydn E major trio, the first thing we hear in the piano and the violin is the main theme, and that begins with an important gesture consisting of three notes, a pickup, a downbeat, and a second beat resolution. The theme, of course, continues after that. Not far into the movement, we hear Haydn extract those three notes, repeating them over and over again in a transitional passage. Haydn also employs a striking episode in a minor key twice. It's announced with an unexpected bang. Beethoven, on the other hand, gets his mileage out of extreme contrasts in dynamics and textures. For example, he presents the main theme in different ways. Listen to the way he first presents it, starting in piano, making crescendo to forte and coming to a dead stop. Then a few moments later, the theme returns, played by the violin with full accompaniment, all forte, and hurtling straight toward its full conclusion after eight bars. Beethoven also makes up for lack of themes with unbridled virtuosity in the piano part as a distraction. The main theme of this finale also comes with an extension, a kind of nagging little motive that appears over and over again. Later, before returning to his first theme, Beethoven shortens even this already short idea into fragments passed between the instruments. Listen to how he shortens it first to four note groups, then cuts them in half to two note groups, eventually stringing together a whole bunch of them.
Those melodic gestures, short and long, together with pianistic virtuosity, drive this movement to one of the literature's most satisfying and triumphant conclusions. Though the closing chromatic line in the piano suggests that what we're hearing might be the triumph of the ghost itself. Thank you. Music at Menlo audio notes are written and produced by myself, Nikki Sweat, in consultation with David Finkel and Wu Han. Many thanks to David, Wu Han, and Arno Sussman for speaking with me on this session. Musical excerpts appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Haydn's Piano Trio in A Major, HOB 1518, was played by pianist Wu Han, violinist Eric Schumann, and cellist Mark Schumann. Beethoven's Piano Trio in C Minor, Opus 1, No. 3, was played by Enon Barnaton, Agustin Hadelich, and Clive Greensmith. Haydn's Piano Trio in E Major, HOB 1528, played by Derek Hahn, Ian Svensson, and David Finkel, and Beethoven's Ghost Piano Trio in D Major, Opus 70, No. 1, played by Derek Hahn, Ian Svensson, and Ronald Thomas, can both be heard on Music at Menlo Live. Audio notes are a copyrighted production of Music at Menlo.